Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other Podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I'm your host, Robert Rosenthal. I am here to talk about our 7-1 football team. I still can't believe I get to say those words. I'm still floating on air. My guest on the pod this evening is Nathan Grimm. So Nathan writes for the site. He does the Postscript column on Mondays. He is also our, I'm going to come up with a title for you, Editor Emeritus. How's that? Does that work?
Although Emeritus, I think, suggests that I'm sort of like,
oh, really?
Floating.
I don't think I know what the word Emeritus
would be. Yeah. Executive editor.
Okay, executive editor. Yeah, the video we did.
Just put myself on the payroll.
Yeah, good point. The video we did. I just added myself as executive producer to the video because it sounded cool. So
yeah,
yes,
it is
executive editor. I like that.
Well, yeah.
Don't editors go usually like editor in chief? I mean, isn't that no? That would be me, right? Am I the editor?
Yeah, that's above my pay grade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So who reports to the editor in chief?
I think everyone in the editorial department then, okay. Right? So I mean that would that would be your I would be like a real like honestly if we were really trying to give me a real title,
let's do it.
It'd probably be like copy editor.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. But you're also a writer, so
right.
copy editor and junior writer. No, junior's not weird. copy editor. There's gonna be something better than just writer, right?
Like features writer or something.
I like it. The postscript
is a little editorializing.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the program copy editor and features writer Nathan Grimm.
That's very official sounding, and
I like
and
it.
Absolutely, what I deserve. Yes.
I like it.
Yeah.
So anyway, Nathan reached out to me years ago. Gosh. 6-7 years ago? I think it was about 6 or 7 years ago. Basically, I'm going to tell the whole story. Basically, you know, he had been in the newspaper business for a while. And so my, I would come up with a good term for this as well. My ability to not close a parenthesis, my ability to forget that I had my ability to take the word and type it when I'm trying to type the word an, bothered him a little bit and said, hey man, your previews are really good. I'm an editor. I could make them even better for really, really quick if you just gave it to me and let me go over it. And so you've been editing the previews for years now. In fact, you're currently, by the way, do you know that Tyler finished his sections or have you been through the folder?
Oh yeah, no, they're edited.
Edited and ready to go.
Ready to go.
Okay. Yep. And has Ben put his stuff in there? I haven't even looked at the folder. We're just doing this live on the air. Let's just have this conversation.
Right. Just hashing out the behind the scenes.
Yes.
Yeah, Tyler's three sections are edited and good to go. Those are the only three that were in the folder. So
okay. He's got a fourth and Ben will probably dump the whole thing at once, probably on like Saturday. And
that
then
we would we wouldn't do it any other way.
Right.
So.
And it comes out Monday. That's the basketball preview comes out Monday. And let's see, what's the other thing about editing? Oh, that's right. I usually finish my stuff, I always say Sunday night, but it's never Sunday night. It's always, hey, Nathan, can you get up early at 5 on Monday and edit my last two sections? I should have them done by 3 a.m.
Hey, I know that your son is 7 now, but can you put him down for a nap so you can...
Yes. Yes.
You can edit this piece for me.
What are we thinking on, what are the rules of, you know, maybe give him a little NyQuil, see if he wants to take an extra nap, you know, maybe a longer nap this time. Yes. So, yes. So the, at preview time, yes, we put them out there. Nathan makes them sound good, and then we put them into the preview and send that away to you. And that will be Monday. I can't even, like, this is the, you know, I've always struggled with the transition of football to basketball because of, you know, one of the 17, whatever you want to say. Like, I'm a football guy. So sometimes I've even been deep into December doing next year's depth chart, and people are like, dude, basketball season's going on. We don't care about about basketball. To try to get the preview, like to get my thoughts around the preview, to get my thoughts around my sections right now is just impossible. It's just, my brain is 97% Illini football right now, when it's normally 78% this time of year. I can't think of anything else. And so it's really hard to put my brain into, in the transfer portal world, can Brad Underwood sustain what he's had the last 3 years? I just can't, you know, this weekend I'm going to have to really, really force myself to get there. Because it's just so hard to think about. Because, I mean, this is all my brain can think about. I mean, you're kind of the same way, right? Aren't you? Would you say you're a little more a football guy than a basketball guy?
I'm definitely one of the 17. Yeah. I carve out, you know, with a couple of kids. I mean, you know this, having boys of your own, like, you basically have to pick and choose the things that are important to you. And so, Saturday afternoons have become my like silver bullets. Like I don't care. I won't watch any sports the rest of the week. I'll go to all the things, but can I get 3 hours every Saturday for 4 months to watch Illini games? And so then basketball season rolls around and I've used up a lot of my goodwill, so I don't get to watch a lot of the basketball. So No, I'm definitely more locked in on football, just in general. And yeah, like you're saying, now it's, you know, I'm reading these previews and I'm learning, you know, and sort of being reacquainted with all the guys, because I just haven't, I've not been paying attention to what's going on really with Illini basketball.
Right. I mean, normally I have danced around it a little bit at this point. Like, you know, I've started to think about it. I haven't even given a thought. Like, I'm just full on into this season and looking up stats and looking up numbers and rewatching games. And, it's just, I mean, I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. It's just a weird thing of like, oh, Monday night, I got to cover a basketball game. Did I even get my press pass yet? You know, like I'm just thinking through all these thoughts that I can't even believe basketball season's here. You know, with what we're facing. So let's get into football, because that's what we're here to talk about. I'll ask you this. So I know you and your friend AJ text back and forth. You've had these long conversations, you know, about Illinois football. So I want to know what those text chains look like right now. You and I haven't, I don't think we've talked about it this year. Just, you know, what is the two buddies who have texted about Illinois football for years? What does that look like right now?
It's a lot like what you would expect, and a lot like probably what a lot of people's, you know, text chains with their buddies look like. You know, in the days leading up to a game, it's about lines, line movement. You know, this guy might be out or whatever, and then, you know, the day of, during, you know, the 3 hours when the game's going on are the most, you know, sort of active in terms of just talking about the game and you know, what a brutal play call, or, you know, like I hate that field goal, you know, and stuff like that. So nothing like too outlandish or you know, we're not going crazy, but we definitely
how much do you let yourself, like, because that in all the text chains I'm part of right now, there's the one guy who's like, I'm not thinking past this game. I just can't, I don't, you know. And then there's the guy, probably me, who is like, you know, if we do beat Michigan and Ohio State, we might lock up a playoff spot. You know, like, how much do you guys let yourselves push your thoughts that far?
Yeah, I mean, I get annoyed with you and you looking past Michigan State. And I wanted to tell you that put my finger in your chest and say that
Okay, let's do it
you
right
are
live on the
letting
air.
yourself.
Yes.
No, I've seen that though. The like
Yes.
the you can't. What do
Yes.
you know, as though you are in the coach's room,
Yes.
looking past Michigan State,
I am on the team. Yes. Yes.
right? Yeah,
I,
yeah. You
yes.
know, so I'm really annoyed with you in that, but I'll we'll take that off air. But no, I you know, it's fun. It's you can't you literally cannot on November 3rd when we're recording this, not think about it because there is a it is not you know I was I laugh I mean I listened to the field pass and you know the joke is that Mikey Dudek is never going to pick the Illini to
Right,
lose a game
right.
except this year he's been right 7 of 8 times and he's probably going to end up being right 9 times 10 times and so you know and we and so we you look you cannot it is not implausible anymore to think about them beating Michigan and Ohio State. It was laughable and would have been probably irresponsible to do it in mid-August, but now on November 3rd, it is a real thing that actually could happen. So no, there is nothing should be off the table because literally nothing is off the table.
Yes. Yes. And that's the that's the hardest adjustment to get to of say we do beat Michigan State, beat Purdue, and it's football, crazy things happen, the wind's gonna blow, who knows what happens Saturday, who knows what happens against Purdue. But to look at the Michigan game and say, same team, right? Like they run the ball, we run the ball. They play great defense, we play great defense. They probably have a little better quarterback, but the way DeVito's slinging the ball right now, I don't know if it's that much better. And receivers are probably even. to look at that game like that is the biggest adjustment I've made this year. I'll say it this way. Okay, everybody's going to Vegas, right? Everybody, Illinois fans who like to travel to games looked at the third weekend in November and said, oh, okay, a Friday, Sunday, two basketball games in Vegas against ranked opponents, or Saturday go to Ann Arbor and watch us play Michigan. I'm not going to go to Michigan and watch us lose 55-3. I'm just going to go to Vegas,
Sure.
and I have it set up that, I'm going to Ann Arbor, obviously, and Tyler is going to go cover the basketball games in Vegas. And, because of all that and the way this season has played out, it's so strange to sit here and say, people who chose Vegas might be missing out. Like the people who's like, just think if I told you that in August, you need to make a choice between Illinois basketball, top 20 team for the last 3 years, and Illinois football, last 7 wins in the regular season year was 2007. And what if I told you in August, like, yeah, I mean, legitimately, that would be you'd be missing out if you didn't go to the Michigan game, And
Yeah.
that's the reality. That's what we're looking at. We could, and it doesn't scare me to say it, we could have the Big Ten West wrapped up. All we need to do is win the next 2 games and then start dreaming even bigger, And with this
That's
defense, it could happen.
my favorite scenario that I've heard laid out. I can't remember where I heard it. It was definitely on a podcast, whether it was the Field Pass or maybe even the Inquirer, the Illini Inquirer podcast, those guys. But I was listening to something and the thing that I really want to play out, which of course I do as an Illini fan, but it would be so nice if we won these next 2 games and had literally nothing to play for,
Yep.
except for bigger aspirations going into Michigan. It wasn't, we lost to Purdue and now we really need to actually win this game. It just the free roll of getting to go into the big house, play loose and play, just play to win the game because of what it means if you win the game and not because of what it means if you lose the game, would be incredible. And that's I need that in my Illini fandom and so that I'm not, going completely crazy on the 19th. But you And it will anyway, right? Because that's what you do as a fan is like, even though, even going in, even if they had the West locked up, you know, and if they got clobbered on the 19th, you'd still be disappointed and annoyed and probably would ruin your afternoon. But still, to win the next two games, to go into that with a chance to really cement yourself in the conversation for the college football playoff with a win, but have nothing, you know, no downside, nothing to lose by going in there and playing loose would be incredible.
Yep. The way I have thought about it is, you know, I've mentioned this 100 times that I still read my mentions. I keep my mentions tab open on Twitter throughout games. When we're losing to Iowa 63-0 and I tweet the most benign little like, hey, we're going to get to see what this backup offensive lineman can do, I get hammered with 35 responses of hate and anger and just, you know, and, you know, that's the extreme example. Then there are, you know, I remember the Northwestern game in 2019 when we had a bowl locked up and, you know, we had all the injuries and we're losing to Northwestern and people are just like angry. And so my experience, my minute by minute experience of going to a game is this constant angst from hundreds and hundreds of fans who just want to take their, you know, angst out on me for whatever reason, because I represent some level of Illini fandom. And so, you know, it's just this been this thing I've learned to live with kind of thing on Twitter that I'm just going to get so much anger, and I can mute some of them, but I can't mute all of them, and that's going to be what it is. That Michigan game, if the scenario you just talked about happens, would be the most glorious Twitter experience ever. Yes, there's going to be crazies who are like, what was that? Why? That's a second three and out. What's Lunny doing? Yes, there's going to be that guy or one or two. But for the most part, it's an entire fan base with their feet up on and their, you know, their fingers locked behind their head, relaxing with a drink in the biggest gravy game in the history of Illini football fandom of, hey, we've already got Indy locked up. Right now, we're just literally playing for the playoff, and we lose this game. That's the penalty. We're still going to go to an amazing bowl game. We're still going to play in the Big Ten championship game. Right now, we're just playing for the most gravy we've ever had. And that would just be such a glorious 3 hours for me, just to be able to have an Illinois game without people thinking that I need to hear how angry they are. So, you know, I dream of that. I just want, part of me wants to win these next two games just for that, because it would be such an amazing experience.
I wonder, I've never really thought about it, but I wonder now that you're talking through this, I wonder if you're like a surrogate for the football program because you have the kind of optimism and, you know, you don't really get negative on the team. It's like you're a team account, except they, you know, the team account is this nebulous sort of like who's running it, and Brett Bielema is never going to see the thing you tweet, the shitty thing you tweet at the team account.
Right.
But
right.
Robert's going to see it if you tweet something shitty at him.
Yep.
And he's kind of the same because he's got this sunny side up, you know, wanting to see the good side. And so I wonder if you represent for those people like a surrogate, like they want someone to hear how mad they are, but they know that tweeting it the football, they're not going to get a response, or they're not going to get through to the Illini football Twitter account.
Right.
But Robert's Twitter, you know, has a better chance of being seen and making their anger known. I wonder if you to them represent like you're like a surrogate for the football program.
I 100% believe that's true, and I could go on for 15 minutes about this. It's why several me at other schools have eventually quit. There are bloggers who kind of represent that. There was a Northwestern guy, he quit, just couldn't do it anymore. I don't want to speak for people, but I'll just tell the basics of the story. Brian Cook at MGO Blog, which is a big Michigan blog who I've followed forever, and you know, I've asked that guy 10 questions over the years of like, how did you do this and how did you do merchandise and this type of thing. He took a step back after the 2020 Michigan season for that reason. Like, I just can't deal with, he didn't say it as well as you did with the surrogate thing, but he just couldn't deal with all the angst and hate that, you know, he's just trying to cover Michigan football. But as a zany fan, people would reach out to him and it just kind of broke him. Like, I just can't, it's not fun for me anymore. So he just did this long post of like, look, guys, I got to take a step back. I don't know if I'll be back. I don't know what's going to happen, but I can't do what I was doing before because it just breaks me. And I have said that to people, like I have this plan for myself. I have these contingencies in place to make sure that never happens to me, because it is true. I have said this stuff before and people will be like, I looked at your mentions. I looked at the response to that one. You're exaggerating. Like, I don't think people can really see all of my even if you just search at Illini and see some of the mentions, you don't see the, like, people will see responses to certain tweets, but they don't see the people just reaching out, putting at Illini and then saying something. And it is relentless. It is nonstop relentless. I have at least 500 people muted. At least, and it still is relentless, you know? And so, it's so true that, you know, who was it? I went to this like conference thing that had bloggers and somebody was telling me something about another fan blogger. Like, I'm the fan and I'm going to say we, and I do this. It was another conference, was a Big Ten thing, who also quit because of that thing. Like, you just have to understand how unrelenting. It never ever stops of I need to reach out to you, and you predicted a win today, and because of that you're gonna get the angst that I have inside, and you know, I need you to respond, I need you to block me, I think is the goal for some people. You know, it's like, I'm just gonna spew. So yes, it's totally that case, and it has led to a lot of people who sit in my chair, the fan blogger, the fanalist, if you will, who eventually just have to take a step back because it's just so hard to represent the fan. And so yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, isn't it funny too? I was thinking about this. You're talking about this guy who, you know, who runs the Michigan, who he had to quit his Michigan blog,
yes,
because the fans were so negative. Mm-hmm. What could have possibly been going on?
Well, they went in Michigan, they go 4-5 five,
right?
No, three,
right.
And,
like, it's just
3-4 or whatever they were in the COVID year.
Yep. Right. It brings me to
yes,
you know, another point that I thought of is it's funny. You know, you're talking about people would be angsty if the 9-1 Illini were losing at Michigan, in the Big House with 100,000 Michigan fans screaming their heads off. Yep. And it's just funny how quickly we change, we get comfortable with the new norm, and we can somehow still, as sports fans, find things to be annoyed by or upset at. And it kind of is reminiscent of the people who were also getting on you. I saw this for, you know, for your, we're number 16 and we probably shouldn't be number 16, but it's yeah, amazing that we're number 16, mm-hmm, you know, stuff. And they were like, you know, you just be happy with the ranking. You're like, no, yeah, no, I am. But also we can admit we can hold two thoughts in our head,
yes,
that I'm ecstatic. And yet we probably shouldn't be number 16. Like, we're still getting discounted a little bit for being Illinois.
Yes.
And it's just, but it is funny though, how quickly we can, I mean, it's just the classic, like, if someone told us in July that on, you know, when the calendar turned to November, we would be 7-1 and nationally ranked,
yep,
we would have said, pinch me, you know, and I need to wake up. And yet here we are, and there's still, we find, even if they are things that we are sort of tongue in cheek laugh, you know, being, you know, not totally upset about, but still it's just funny how no level of success, I think we quickly get so comfortable with the level of success that we found and still find things to, you know, to nitpick and complain about. And, you know, and that goes back to, like, you were asking about the thread. I mean, you know, there were moments in last Saturday's game where It was uncomfortable, and where, you know, that you start thinking like, oh geez, are they going to lose to Nebraska? And you know, it was like one of those field goals in the fourth quarter or late in the game where I was like, this. I texted AJ. I was like, I hate this decision. This is a weak decision.
Yeah.
And you know, and the game at that point, I mean, they were putting it, you know, out of reach, and it wasn't ever really. I mean, was Nebraska ever really gonna come back with Chuba Purdy? No, but it's still like we just we so quickly and so easily, you know, forget how happy we are to be 7-1, and in the moment we're like, this is, what are we doing here? This is awful. So yeah. it's funny how like I said, how quickly we can get to a point where we're just never content as fans, right? Like it's just never, we're never fully, you know, I don't care what happens in this game because we're 7-1. It's no, that was a bullshit call on third down.
Right. Right. Yeah. I, you know, it's funny, you know, on top of that, going back to the MGo blog thing. And again, I don't want to, Brian Cook wrote a long article about it about a year and a half ago. So people can go look that up. I don't want to speak for him. I don't want to say like, this is why he did this, but he mentioned in that article how he enjoys covering Michigan hockey, because it exists in a space where that's not a thing. You know, yes, there are Michigan hockey crazies. Yes, there are people like, oh my God, how did we not make the Frozen Four? Yes, that's a thing. But it's not this overarching, as soon as you're good, you want, you know, you were expecting a 7-5 season, and when you're 8-1, the next loss is even more devastating because you've cranked up your expectations to 11 wins or death. and, you know, for him, covering hockey games just, it takes that away. You know, you can just go be a fan and go hockey team, and I'm mad about this and I'm happy about this, and you can just exist in this world where you don't have to face that constant onslaught. For me, covering golf is exactly that. Like, writing about golf is so fun for me because I know, you know, you know me, you know, we've talked about my writing because you're editing my writing, not every post, so don't get mad when I forget that parentheses tomorrow. It's not Nate's fault. Nathan has only edited the previews. But, you know, when I'm writing about golf, it just feels free because I'm not thinking, oh, God, if I write this, I'm going to get 19 emails and I'm going to get a whole bunch of responses. I'm going to have people reaching out and DMs on Slack. And, you know, so I know what the response is going to be if I write a certain thing. So I'm constantly writing in this space with a bunch of like trap doors. And then when I go write about golf, it's just, I'm writing about golf. Like, you know, I can just write about a sport the same way, analyze the depth chart the same way as I would for football, but I don't have to think about any trap doors because there's not going to, you know, if I do slip through this door, it's not some free fall into the pit with 100 angry fans. It's just, you know, there might be one or two people who would casually disagree with me, you know? And so right. I've read his article several times because, and other things he said on Twitter and he's written about it, because it's just that experience of, man, I totally get why he enjoys covering hockey and why he enjoys writing about hockey, just because he can go to this other space where there's not all this angst. So, you know,
right.
you didn't know you put me up on a soapbox, but this is like my topic here of, you know, it's very, very interesting. And that's why this season keeps getting more fun, because it hasn't exactly been that. I mean, I'm not saying that this year is that. It's been the past seasons. It's so much better this year to write about football. But it's still fun to write about golf because I can step into this space where there's just nothing, you know, I don't have to worry about, if I say this, I'm going to get an onslaught.
Just a small aside to take us further off track here. I don't know if I told you this, but when I was at in Champaign and was writing for the Daily Illini, I actually covered the golf team, and Mike Small was still the coach at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But it was before they got good; it was when they were pretty bad. Mm-hmm. And so it's like I look at it now and I go like, why couldn't I have covered this team?
Right.
You know, why was I covering the teams that were finishing, you know, 14th and trying to write these like You know, well, I want to say his name was Tim Nagel. Does that sound right? You know, like, you know, this guy had a good tournament, but you know, Illinois finished, you know, below all these teams, and trying to find these kind of like
Right.
pluck the good thing out of the generally bad. And now, you know, I left, and then Mike Small's winning, you know, championships left and right. So it's funny to look at that now and see how great and successful that team has been. And yet, when I covered it, he was still building up the program, and they were, you know, on page six of the sports page or whatever.
Yeah, that is funny. Just, you know,
Yeah.
it was something I was thinking about today with Bielma, of like how the culture has changed so quickly kind of thing. You know, that's this fascinating thing for me of, you know, Mike Small started recruiting fairly well and started getting some guys in there, but it didn't really take off at first. Like, it wasn't, you know, he was still a good coach and he was still finding the guys. It's just he hadn't built it to this self-sustaining level. And then once he got Chris DeForest and Scott Langley and, you know, built this, you know, next level, and then he gets a little better guys, and then it's this, you know, it doesn't matter who he plugs in the next year, they're just rolling. You
Yeah.
know, and that's fascinating to me, as you know, we just saw it with Underwood, right? Like, you know, he took him a bit, and he wasn't a bad coach in 2019. And you know, he had a team with, I mean, I always think of the Missouri game in December of 2019. He's 2.5 years in. We get beat by a bad, bad, bad Missouri team. He had Io, he had Kofi, and it just wasn't there yet. You know, he had Trent, he had DeMonte, all, you know, he had Feliz. The entire team we remember is there. It's just they start 9-5 that year or whatever, and they lose to Missouri. And so, you know, it's just interesting to me to see corners turned, because really for Bielma, it was last year Penn State. If you think back to that, since that Penn State game, we have been a different program. And he got there in 7 games. I don't even understand how that works. You know, I don't understand how he built that quickly. But we have been in every game or winning every game since Penn State last year.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. And I don't know, it's interesting. We one thing that clearly he did right is, you know, got it right with Ryan Walters, got it right with a lot of the assistant, you know, the positional coaches, offense and defense. But it's, you know, the thing that really took it to the next level this year was actually the thing that you and I were kind of in lockstep that he shouldn't do, which was firing Tony Petersen and bringing in Barry Lunny. We weren't, you know, we weren't opposed to Barry Lunny, because Barry Lunny wasn't a name that was on our radar yet. But it was just the idea that, firing Tony Petersen after a season was not creating that consistency that you're talking about with, you know, with all these coaches, Underwood and Mike Small, and you know, now with Brett, you know, this sort of that steady, you know, through line. And it turned out to be, you know, obviously the maybe the one real difference between last year and this year is having a guy in there who Brett trusts and who has an offense that works a little better than Peterson's. And it's just really, yeah, it's that's interesting, because I remember that you know, that you and I both were outspoken and thinking that it probably needed more time, and then it made that wasn't really the right move, or it just seemed a little bit rash to go, this guy is the cause of all our problems, and he's got to go after a season. And yet, goodness, I mean, that certainly seems to have been the case.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, I believe I made the point sometime last year that, you know, the reason for me, I always think of it in terms of that. I'm sure you've seen the picture on Twitter or something of the Cleveland Browns fan that has the name of every quarterback, like since Bernie Kosar or whatever, on the back of one jersey. You know, I think it's a Tim Couch jersey, and then he just puts the name of this guy. No, it's this guy. No, it's going to be this guy. No, it's going to be this guy. No, it's going to be this guy. And they're, you know, 23 quarterbacks in, and they still haven't found their guy yet. And you know, that was always my point with the offense of, it's like, look, we can't, you know, like Iowa had one offensive coordinator for like the first 14 years and Ken O'Keefe, and it just worked for Iowa, and they had built this one offense, and you know, meanwhile we're going coordinator to coordinator, and like, just pick something and stick with it and recruit to it and stay to it. You know, so I had made that point over and over and over, and here we are, you know, changing offensive coordinators after 1 year and finding a quarterback that I don't think there was very much fanfare when Tommy DeVito, you know, we were all focused on, hey, let's go get one of those USC guys who's going to transfer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are with DeVito playing like, I don't know, maybe the best quarterback in the Big Ten West, if it's not Aiden O'Connell, and
incredible. Yeah.
And you know, that's the third piece to this is build a defense, check, have a great running game, check, and find a quarterback who's not going to make mistakes, check. And so, you know, it's just crazy to be there already.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I think that we do need to, if we're going to pour a little cold water on it, or at least try and keep some perspective, is a lot of serendipity. A lot of things really fell into place this year with finding this coordinator who was able to install an offense that works really well for the personnel they have, and you know, works well in the Big Ten West, and you know, and they've had luck that some of the teams that are usually the bullies in the conference, in the division,
yep,
are down this year. And then having, you know, bringing in DeVito before Barry Lunny was even, I think it wasn't that the order,
yep,
it was. DeVito came. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And so then to have a quarterback who transfers in, who so perfectly fits the then scheme that you install, you know, kind of backwards. It just, so much has gone. It just, you know, it's, I hope that this success will spin forward and we will be attractive to the next mobile quarterback who's not, you know, a five-star hotshot, but who's, mm-hmm, you know, all the things that Barry Lunny needs in a quarterback, and hope that guy will want to come here and just keep this thing rolling. But it's definitely, you need to pause for a second and just realize how much has needed to go right for us to be where we are right now, and, you know, and a lot of variables that were just perfect for the situation.
Yeah, I believe Bielema calls it an arranged marriage, that he found the quarterback, and then he found the offensive coordinator, and he put them together in a room and said, "You guys are going to work great together." And,
right, and you're not, you know, the thing is that you've got this quarterback for a year, and you're hoping to hire the coordinator for the foreseeable future.
Yep.
And so you've got DeVito committed and going to be on campus, and you cannot then go out and pick an offensive coordinator who just specifically fits DeVito's skill set. You've just got to hope that DeVito fits into the skill set of the offensive coordinator that you're bringing in and hoping to keep around for, you know, for X number of years. And so the fact that it did work out that way, really is again, it's we're very fortunate to have all these pieces, you know, because it's not easy. We've seen it's not easy to go out into the transfer market and bring in a quarterback who just like is a great fit. I mean, Brandon Peters was serviceable, but really was probably never really a great fit for what past offensive coordinators and past offenses were trying to do. You know, and we've talked, there's been so many, you know, because DeVito's been so good, there's been so many pieces about or questions people just even on Twitter, is Tommy DeVito the best Illinois quarterback since Nathan Shielhouse, since Juice Williams, you know, Kurt Kittner, who knows, you know, like statistically and all of that, the eye tests and everything, but you know, to have it all come together like this was is very very great. It's very sort of serendipitous.
Okay, I'm gonna give you, I'm just, you said that, I'm thinking through the seasons. So since 2000, here's what I'm gonna give you. I'm gonna go. See, it's hard to put Juice into something like that because, like, he was just Juice was gonna be like 54% completion percentage. You know, DeVito's up.
Yeah, this is a different, deal.
But he's gonna get 1,000 yards rushing, and that matters.
Yeah.
And he's gonna pick up, you know, we all think of the drive against Ohio State where it's like, oh, third and 12, he's going to run, stop him. Oh, he couldn't. Too bad.
Right.
You know,
right.
Different thing. I would say Kitner 01 is number one. Shieldhouse 13, number two. Dark Horse, great season. Fantastic season. Juice 08, number three. Tommy DeVito 22, number four. And then Butcher 02, number five. That's off the top of my head. I might have to go check that later. But I'd say those are the five best quarterbacking seasons. And DeVito's really probably gaining on Juice 08 and Shieldhouse 13.
Yeah, if he keeps, you know, he's still obviously got a month to work with, and
he might have 14 you know. Games to work with. I just can't. Some of these things I just cannot get over. We might have six games remaining, even though we only have four games remaining.
We'll have to reserve. Yeah, we'll have to reserve our judgment of Tommy DeVito until the second week of January.
Yep.
it's crazy. I mean, we're used to saying.
Look, 25 years ago today. So again, we're recording this on November 3rd. So 25 years ago today was the Nick Bell game, 1990 against Iowa. Illinois was number five. That's right. You heard me correctly. The University of Illinois in 1990 was number five in the polls. And Iowa was number 11, number 13, something like that. And Iowa is coming to Champaign. It's this win it, and we probably wrap up the Big Ten and go to the Rose Bowl. And we lost something like, 55-23 or something like that. Nick Bell goes off. Brett Bielema's on the field as an Iowa Hawkeye. He said he didn't play much that game, but he remembers the atmosphere. Here we are 25 years. So, that's right when I was a high school senior. That's the month I was accepted to go to Illinois. And so, this was very real in my mind that we entered that November with a chance to – we had already beaten Colorado. We had a chance to win out, go to the Rose Bowl, and maybe play somebody really good with a chance that the national title's on the line. It was one of those years where, the national title was split between Colorado and Georgia Tech, if you want to know how strong the powerful teams were at the time. It was just that kind of year, and we had an opportunity. So it didn't go well. Look, we lost to Iowa, then we lost to Michigan the following week, and we went from number five to like number 24 in the polls, and it just kind of all fell apart. Still a great season. We still won eight games. It just wasn't the season we were thinking we were having on November 1st when we were number five. I just want to say that because we could acknowledge here, look, we could lose two of the next four. We could lose three of the next four. We could finish 8-4 and be like, oh, man, it was right there. But that's what being 7-1, that's what like being this close, like the worst case scenario now is still incredible. Like the worst case scenario, the absolute worst case scenario at this moment is our first winning season in the regular season since 2007. That's the worst. That's the floor now. The floor is our first 7-win regular season since 2007.
Right. Which is
free.
Yeah, it's an incredible thing to say out loud, and yet this is the sort of the two sides of fandom, and the thing that kills you is that it's exactly what you're describing with that 1990 season, is that we can sit here on November 3rd and be 7-1 and be talking about the possibility of going to the Big Ten title game, of going to the Big House with nothing to lose, and all going to the college football playoff. I mean, it's all on the table, and yet also on the table is 8-4 and a bowl game in late December, and a objectively a good year and one of the best years the team has had in decades, and yet there would be a part of you that would feel disappointed by it. Right. Mm-hmm, it's, and that's wild. And it sounds ridiculous to say, and yet, this is where we are, is that we so quickly have changed, our expectations and our beliefs about the team, is that it would be disappointing if sitting here now, if we finished 8-4, even though we all would have, you know, sold our firstborn children for 8-4 mm-hmm. 3 months ago.
My firstborn is coming to the game on Saturday, so maybe I should probably be glad I didn't sell. So this thought just occurred to me for whatever reason while you were talking. You know, you're probably too young to remember the 99 Rams. You would have been, what, high school? No. When were you a freshman at Illinois?
2004.
Okay. So 99 Rams, you would have been like in junior high or something, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway.
I've got to, you know, try me.
Okay. Well, the thing... The only other time in my life I've had these conversations of, you know, what's a disappointment now would be the 99 Rams. I'm a Rams season ticket holder. The Rams moved to St. Louis. They went 7-9, then they went 6-10, then they went 5-11, then they went 4-12 in their first 4 years in St. Louis. So, you know, it was just bad and then more bad and then more bad. They go get Trent Green. He's going to be the future. He tears his ACL in a preseason game. Rodney Harrison, I believe, dove at his knees. And that's it. And then they have to go with Kurt Warner, the backup from NFL Europe and Iowa Barnstormers and blah, blah, blah. And so Rams start 4-0. The Sports Illustrated cover of Kurt Warner is, who is this guy? You know, all this stuff. And I just remember about halfway through that season, again, the Rams had gone 7 wins, 6 wins, 5 wins, 4 wins. You know, they're at 7-1 or they're at 8-1 or 8-2 or whatever they were. I just remember having that, like, gosh, we've already cleared the bar. Now what? Like, the rest is kind of gravy kind of thing. And, man, it would be so disappointing. I remember in the NFC Championship game against the Buccaneers, a game that the Rams won, I believe the score was 11-6 in that game. You know, I'm at that game. I'm the Ricky Prohl catch happened right in front of me. I have all these great memories of that. And that's the only other sports moment of my life where there was this much disbelief involved, to where it was like, gosh, if this team loses to Tampa Bay, you know, I think the Rams are favored like by 11 or 13 or something in that game. You know, if it all ends here, that's terribly disappointing. But there's still this, like, I can't believe we're here kind of thing, you know. So as I look at this next month, that's the only thing I can think of to call back on of, this was a 4-12 team expected to go like 3-13, and suddenly, you know, they figure out how to use Isaac Bruce. They bring in Torrey Holt, and he's a revelation. They get Marshall Faulk from the Colts, and he's exactly what this offense needs. Mike Martz has this offense that nobody can figure out. Kurt Warner is suddenly the league MVP, and a 4-12 team goes on to win the Super Bowl. I'm not saying Illinois is going to go on to win the college football playoff, but that's the only thing I have to go on in my sports life that feels like this. That is a... Oh my goodness, like we're good. Like, that's when I think about our defense is how I think about the greatest show on turf on offense. Like suddenly you watched Marshall Faulk and Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce and Kurt Warner, and it's like, wait, no, they're not just, this is like an epic offense. This isn't just like, oh, that's the best offense the Rams have had since they moved to St. Louis. It was like there's a nickname for it, right? The greatest show on turf. So, you know, this defense is kind of that to me right now. So I just have these same feelings of like, wait, this is legit. Yet I'm still in disbelief of like, I can't believe all of this is happening. You know, so take it for what it's worth, call it an aside, but that's where my brain is right now of like 7-1, like we've kind of cleared the bar. The rest is gravy. If we win these next two and go to Indy, then the Michigan game is, you know, like, it's the only thing I can think of that comes close to what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah, it's too bad that comparison ends with the Rams winning a Super Bowl. So you don't really have the experience of what happens when it doesn't go well.
Yes, because by 2001, they're favored by the Patriots by, you know, more than 10 points or whatever, and they lose, and I'm just devastated beyond belief. Because at that point, they're supposed to be good. You're right. I don't have that. Oh, well, it was fun while it lasted, and this is still a great moment. You're right. That'll be new territory for me.
The problem too is that not the we're Illinois football and we can't be trusted thing, but it's just, you know, you pay attention to college football and you see that weird things happen on a weekly basis. And so even with Michigan State missing 8 players on their defense, and, you know, including, you know, by all accounts, this Winman is, you know, kind of the guy on the defense, and they're missing a starting safety. And, you know, even with the line movement up to 17 now, there's part of my brain.
What's that number again, Nate? Could you repeat that number?
Yes, 17.
17.
They were they're 17-point favorites against Michigan State, a team that, yes, you know, last year was nationally ranked and was supposed to be, I think, started the year this year, and you know, not just ranked, but ranked pretty highly.
Yes, they ranked number 11 at one point.
Yeah, which was always maybe fraudulent, but still. Yeah,
but still, tell me we're going to be 17-point favorites over Michigan State on November 5th. Yeah,
insane. And yet, does anybody, can you, as just a college, not even an Illini fan, as a college football fan, can you comfortably go into Saturday and go, yeah, we're gonna take care of business? There's still, and there will be for every game here on out, regardless of the stakes, regardless of who the opponent is. You know, Northwestern after Thanksgiving? Are we like really gonna like go into that game and go, yeah, we're gonna roll Northwestern? It is still there's that part of my brain that I go, I'm terrified for this, you know, game against X. And so I'm still going to be working through that for the next however many weeks we're still playing.
Yeah, I mean, even if we're favored over Northwestern by like 22 or something crazy, you know, and they're like 1-10 going into that game or whatever they will be, you know, I'll still think of, gosh, was it 0-1? Yeah, it was 0-1 when we had a chance to lock up the Big Ten, and we beat them by 6, was it? Something like that? I'll have to look that up. Yes, you're right. There's also this thing that the stakes are so high that, you know, if we were playing Northwestern and we were, you know, 6-5 and we already had a bowl locked up and it was either for 7-5 or 6-6 kind of season, there's nerves. If we're doing it for, okay, well, you know, we need that one to get to Indy, you're right. I'm going to face that game with just, you know, to get this far. And, you know, you just know Fitzy would love to do this just like he did in 19. And, yep. I'm enjoying exploring these fan territories. I'm enjoying exploring, well, let's see what that feels like. Well, let's see what that feels like. Because let me tell you, watching the college football playoff rankings on a Tuesday night on ESPN felt pretty good. So I'm enjoying exploring the space.
I'll tell you, this is a good sort of just state of the union of the difference in the way that I feel about things is that when in 2019, when we came back in that Michigan State game, and, you know, and the pass to Daniel Barker, and they then, you know, Lovie with the bowling ball, and I got emotional at that moment, because, you know, it had been a long climb to try to get back to relevance, and it felt like maybe that was the start of something, and they're going bowling, and it was all cool. And, you know, I think also the way they did it in that game. And so you know, I remember getting emotional watching the end of that game. When we won our 6th game this year to get bowl eligibility, it was like, okay, you know, cool. But I really, I had already moved past the like, are we going to be bowl eligible or not? Yep. Which I think 2019, that was the question. It was, are we going to get to six wins? This year we are such a different team that when they won that sixth game, the fact that they were bowl eligible was honestly just sort of an afterthought too. Or are they going to be, you know, what are they going to be ranked? And who's next? What's the path to winning the Big Ten West? There's such a different vibe than, oh, yay, they're bowl eligible. And I think that maybe if there's one sort of good indication of this year's team as compared to that year's team or past teams, it's I think for me, it's that, you know, that was the mountaintop in 2019 was getting to a bowl. And this year it was a little plateau that you reached and you took a one short break to get a drink of water and then you just kept climbing. And that wasn't even, you barely even registered that you had stopped on that plateau because you had bigger things to climb. And so that's, I think, a good, you know, if I'm going to try and take a larger view of this season and compare it to others.
That's a great, great point. You know, it makes me think of, I listened to the Solid Verbal podcast, the college football podcast, Ty Hilbrandt and Dan Rubenstein.
Yeah.
And when they did their Big Ten West preview, they were talking about Illinois and like, look, there's some life there. And they went 5-7 last year. They did lose a lot of players. And they went through the schedule. And I had no problem with them saying this. You know, Dan said, look, they could be 3-1 or 4-0. Like they have, you know, it's right there to win. You know, we always talk about the drive for six with Illinois, you know, they just need two of their last eight games or whatever to get to a bowl. He's like, but let me just read you what their schedule does after that Chattanooga game. And so he reads it off: at Wisconsin, home for Iowa, home for Minnesota, at Nebraska, home for Michigan State, home for Purdue, at Michigan. He's like, those are the next seven games after that. And he's like, I just feel like Illinois might start 3-1 and then reality will just slap them in the face. They get no weeks off. They get no anything. You know, to think back through that list, to know that so far you're 4-0 through that run, and to think that what Wisconsin was supposed to be didn't become, what Iowa was supposed to be didn't happen, you know, Nebraska was supposed to be back. They're not. They've already fired their coach. Iowa's offense is horrible. Minnesota was supposed to rebound, but then they lost three in a row. You know, just the way this season has played out, to me, has led to that kind of like, you know, like this is a special year feeling. Like,
yeah,
you know, as a. I'm just going to stay on the St. Louis theme. You know, Blues 2019, right? You know,
yeah.
They're the worst team on January 1st. They have the worst record in all of hockey. They go to some bar in Philadelphia. They're playing the song Gloria. They decide in January when they win games, they're going to play Gloria. It becomes this thing. They get on a roll. Then they're the best team in hockey, and they win the Stanley Cup. You know, there's just some of those where, you know, you were saying how, you know, that you were emotional because we got the six wins, and right now it doesn't even feel like you knew six wins were coming. Now it's just, where did this go? That where did this go? Again, I'm not saying, oh, you know, this is Gloria. Illinois going to win a national title. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, there is that sense to this season that something's happening here. Like, you know, this is that kind of year. I don't know how to put a finger on that, but you know, it's whatever the Phillies have right now. They're probably losing. I haven't checked the score, but like, you know, there's just sometimes that all that all clicks together. And you know, you could tell the Braves last year that was just going to happen. You know, just you could just sense it with their fan base and this and that as they were rolling through things, that this is a thing that's going to happen. And that's the sense around this team for me.
Yeah, and it's the funny thing is, if it happened to anyone else that's a similar, like Indiana's a perfect example. Indiana springs to life and is with, you know, a couple years ago with Michael Penix and the whole thing, one of the best teams in the country. And I go, oh, you know, that's good for them. That I don't think anything, I don't think twice, or I don't think anything of them leaping up and having this incredible year where they are, you know, suddenly a team to be reckoned with and a team that people are talking about in the conversation for, you know, the playoff and for winning the Big Ten and all these things. That's a thing that's totally plausible in my mind. It is just by, like, you know, the math of the universe or whatever, equally as plausible that Illinois could do that this year, jump up and sure, be a team that wins 10, 11 games. Except that my brain, unlike Indiana, my brain does not go, oh yeah, sure, that's a thing that happens. You know, my brain is like, that's not a thing that happens to your team, mm-hmm, you know? And so, yes, you're correct that there's definitely a possibility, and the way that things have gone, you know, as I laid out, I mean, all of the things that have had to come together for this, for just to be even here, the way that things have gone, would suggest that there is some destiny, to it. And yet, unlike with those other teams, my brain will not let me get to the, hey, this could be a team of destiny, that actually does those things that we're talking about as being possible, but not realistic, you know, going to the playoff or even, beating Michigan in the Big House, or, you know, beating Ohio State in the Big Ten championship. Those are all things that we at the start said, yeah, sure, we should talk about them as being things that could happen. But in my mind, do I think they're going to happen? Do I think there's any way those things are going to happen? No. And that's kind of funny that there's a disconnect there, right? It's my brain won't let me get to the part where Illinois could actually be a team of destiny, because that's not a thing that happens to Illinois.
Yeah. All right. We need to wrap up here, so I'm going to give you one last question. Just give me your gut. So we play Michigan State, Purdue at home. Then we go on the road to Michigan, on the road to Northwestern. Those four games, what do you think happens? Just what does your gut say? We have to break down every game. Just like, do you see this as a 10-2 year? Are we going 9-3? What do you think is, what do you think the final result is for the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the only question for me, the number, I think, is the floor is 2 more wins. So I think 9 wins is kind of where we're at, because I do think that Michigan State is, we're catching them at just like the worst possible time for them. And so I think that's a win. I think Northwestern is a game that we win 98 times out of 100. Mm-hmm. And so I count those. I don't think Purdue is a walk. I think that there's a lot that could factor into that game. And obviously going to Michigan, I think, is the ultimate, like we said, kind of free roll slash, you can shoot your shot, but I don't think that it's real plausible. So since Purdue has to come here, I know you said I don't need to break it down, but just talking through it.
You're fine.
I guess since Purdue has to come to Champaign, since it's going to be a game that carries Big Ten West implications and the crowd should be amped up for it and the team should be amped up for it, I'll say that that's a game that we're going to be favored in, and I think that's a game that we should win. So, sure. I mean, I'll say let's say 10-2 and a trip to Indianapolis in early December.
Love it. Love it. Love it. One of the more ironic moments here, not ironic, I have a text here from Ben saying he just put his stuff in the folder of the team previews for the basketball preview. So, young man, you have some work to do. All of Ben's stuff. That preview is out Monday. Okay, listen, thanks for doing this. This is fun. I could talk about this team for weeks and weeks and years and years. So, this was fun. So thanks for doing this with me.
Here's hoping that we are talking about this team for years and years, right?
Yeah, let's hope. And can we get you to Indy? I know you've got kid duty and everything else, but it is Indianapolis. You think we could get you down there?
We can talk about it.
Okay.
I make no promise. I've been married long enough that I know to make no promises.
You got it. I got it. Okay, we'll take that offline. Okay. All right, thanks, Nathan. I appreciate you doing this. Let's have some fun. Go Lions.